Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host Alejandro Rojas.
See, it's just a mix, that music. It's urban, but it's like futuristic and UFO all at the same time. It's beautiful. Welcome to UFO Radio, presented by Open Minds. My name is Alejandro Rojas. So we've got cooler and cooler stuff here in the studio, like I keep talking about. And now we have this cool crane. So if you're watching me on the Ustream video, which I better mute the audio so I don't hear myself talk twice, you know, we've got it streaming on Ustream. If you could check that out, you just go to Ustream.com and search for Open Minds, and you'll see us there broadcasting live. And then, of course, we're also on Blog Talk. Speaking of the other places that you'll find Open Minds Radio, is you'll find us on the UFO Paranormal Network, and soon to be broadcasted on Glastonbury Radio. And that is very exciting because that's in the UK, and that's in the area where all the crop circles happen. So thank you, everybody, for syndicating our show. Thank you, listeners, for joining our show. And today, we have a particular cool show. That reminds me, my buddy is in the chat telling me that I suck trying to be funny. And this is the same guy who named Chico Spock here. We don't like the name. We've been saying, man, we need to call him something else. But this little alien sidekick that I kind of have in here, which is actually from the Wendell Stevens collection. He's an Iargon, and you can go research Iargons. In fact, I think you can download Wendell's book about the Iargons for free. Very interesting story, but that's what we have here, and my buddy in the chat named him Chico Spock, and that name has stuck, even though it's kind of a weird name. It is pretty funny, we all must admit. My guest for this evening, this is really exciting. In fact, I was on UFO Not Radio. I'm on UFO Not Radio on Sunday evenings every week, and I do the UFO updates for them there. And last week, he kind of had a panel. He had me with the guy who owns UFO TV, Tim Crawford, Mark Easter, who we had on the show, who's the new PR guy for MUFON, and this gentleman, Bryce Zabel. And I was really excited to talk to him and be able to hear what he had to say. And he has some great insights, because this person has been in the media. You know, there's a lot of conspiracies about UFOs and UFO movies and UFOs in the media. And here's a guy who was a CNN correspondent, and he's kind of turned into, well, kind of completely turned into a writer and producer. And he's written a lot of television shows, produced a lot of television shows. He's written Dark Skies. I know a lot of UFO people remember Dark Skies because it was conspiracy based with MJ-12 and, you know, this kid who got mixed up with MJ-12 and aliens and everything and all these conspiracies. He also had a show called Official Denial around this stuff. He worked with Steven Spielberg on Taken, and we'll talk to him a lot more about that. If you haven't seen that, oh my gosh, you got to check this out. Go buy the DVD set. You will not be disappointed. It was a miniseries created by Steven Spielberg on the abduction phenomena, and you can tell he certainly did a lot of research because, just like a lot of the guests who have been on the show here today, he covers a lot of the different aspects of alien abduction. So we're going to talk to Bryce about his research, what he's looked into regarding UFOs, what he thinks of the whole thing, and more special for me, you know, we're going to be able to get his insight into how things really work. Is there a conspiracy? Is the government using Spielberg and these other dudes to leak UFO information to the public to get us ready for disclosure and contact? I think many of you are nodding your head saying, yeah, dude, totally. But let's ask someone who is actually on the inside. Let's see, over here in the Blog Talk chat, we've got some people over there. Don't forget, Blog Talk chatters, you can also watch us over on Ustream, and I will cut and paste the link over there because I don't see my buddy Jackal in here doing that for me. But let's get into some UFO news for the week. There has been, you know, it was kind of interesting towards the beginning of the week, late last week, there wasn't a lot of news. And what's wonderful is if you track this stuff, there's a lot, UFOs are in mainstream media a lot, and that's what I'm talking about. When I talk about these UFO stories, we're talking about mainstream media. There wasn't a whole lot. Of course, you'll remember the big story, which was Balloon Boy. And this was, you know, I even talked about it because it was happening during the show last time where this kid, everybody thought this kid was stuck in a balloon floating above Fort Collins, Colorado, and 7,000 feet above the ground. People are freaking out. Helicopters, police are dispatched, and everybody's figuring out how to save the kid. And, you know, even on the show, I'm over here, you know, I didn't quite get savvy, but I was like, you know, this poor kid, what's going to happen to the kid, man? Well, the balloon landed. There was no kid, and it turns out that the whole thing was probably a hoax, which is a bummer because this guy, the guy who put on the Heen family is their name, they were part of this show called Wife Swap. And for actually the last few years, Wife Swap has been emailing a lot of us in UFO research saying, hey, we want to bring on a UFO family. Have you swap with a non-UFO believing family? And they thought that would be interesting. Well, nobody wanted to be on the show. Everybody is turning it down. You know, I sent it to a lot of people. People are like, well, I don't like the show, and I don't want to be on it. Well, they finally found this Heen guy to be on the show. I guess he was kind of a goofball on the show, and he really got the bug. He wanted to be famous, and so he hoaxed this whole balloon thing, which is unfortunate. He's probably going to go to jail, which probably is appropriate because, I mean, for goodness sakes, he had all of the helicopter and all of this, these people upset, including us on our Open Minds Radio here, wondering what's going on. And the funny part is you probably saw this on Larry King. That's where he got busted because he asked his kid on Larry King, why were you hiding in the attic? And the kid says, well, because you told me to for the show, Dad. The honesty of the little kids. So that's where he really got busted. So he is in big trouble now. Toast. So that's a Balloon Boy update. We had to talk about that because it was a little UFO thing. It was UFO related, and it's unfortunate that this guy, of course, made lots of UFO believers look ridiculous. We can do that by ourselves. We don't need your help, Mr. Heen. Ernie Sears. This is unfortunate. A gentleman by the name of Ernie Sears passed away, and he was a famous abductee in the UK. So really, this can also fit under UK news, but that's a big deal because they're working on a television show, and I think they're going to have a TV show or a movie in the UK about this gentleman. That ought to be interesting, and hopefully we'll be able to see it here in the United States, maybe if you have the BBC channel, which, by the way, if you watch The Office, the BBC Office was first, and it was, I think it was really funny. I can't get as into the Office because The BBC one was hilarious, and I know they're going to be showing that, funny enough, in the middle of the night on Cartoon Network here soon, so you got to catch that. Speaking of the UK and their goofball characters out there, Gary McKinnon, I keep talking about Gary McKinnon every week, and out on the roller coaster, he's in trouble, he's not in trouble. Well, now they're talking about Gary McKinnon did get a stay on being extradited, which is, you know, finally a little spark of good news for him after just getting denied in many appeal court, you know, lots of people saying, sorry, Gary, you know, we're handing you over. Well, he did get a stay because of, I guess, medical reasons that could keep him in the UK, and they are actually reviewing their extradition policies in Britain, because the main reason a lot of British have been protesting is not because he looked up UFO stuff, but because they feel that, you know, the Britons, you know, bend to U.S. demands too often. And they feel that, you know, the extradition policies that we have here in the U.S. with Britain are too lenient towards the U.S., you know, instead of Britain. And so they don't think it's fair. And so they're looking at that, and they may change the laws and everything. So Gary McKinnon may not have to face U.S. prison time and may be able to do his prison time in the U.K., where he'll be able to enjoy his crumpets and tea over there, because I think they're pretty laid back. You know, they play chess and backgammon and drink tea in prison out there. But out here, of course, it's gang warfare and people shanking each other. That's where shanking comes from, I think, is prison. U.S. prisons invented shanking. And if you don't know what a shanking is, you don't want that, because it's bad. Other news. Oklahoma skies, the astronomy club. There's an astronomy club looking at the night skies, and they saw a UFO and reported that to MUFON. That's very interesting. Also, Napoleon Dynamite has some UFO news here, and if you're in the live video stream, you'll be able to see a picture of Napoleon there. I'm going to look, because he's such a funny looking guy and just cracks me up looking at pictures of Napoleon Dynamite. But the makers of the movie, I'm not sure if they were kidding. They might have been kidding, but a story came out that originally they wanted Napoleon Dynamite to be a UFO story, where this guy was going to be, this kid was going to be a UFO researcher. So, but they changed that, and he was just kind of a rural, goofball, dorky kid instead of a cool, you know, UFO researcher. It changes the whole thing, because UFO researchers are extremely cool. When it comes to cool, you know, UFO researchers are cooler than Fonzie. And so, you know, it didn't really work with the dorky theme, I guess, but that was kind of some funny news to see Napoleon Dynamite popping up related with UFO news. Indonesia, I don't think I gave Jason a picture for this one, but Indonesia, there's been some UFO hubbub out there. There was a photo that came out, and I guess it made some really big news out there, but one of the main UFO researchers was able to debunk the photo, and it was a little bit of a too-good-to-be-true photo, but who knows? You know, you'll be able to check that out. You can go to ufothinktank.com, actually, and look towards the bottom of the page to see these stories if you want to take a look at them. But, yeah, you can take a look at the picture, see what you think, read this guy's evidence. But it did look pretty hoaxy. More UK news, so we can even put up the UK flag. Bravo, UK. More UK, a councilwoman wants an end to UFO secrecy. So Winchester City Councilwoman has asked the government, the U.S. and the U.K. government, to release what they know about UFOs. And she is adamant about this, and she is upset about the secrecy, and that's kind of neat. And so that made some news. Also, Colin Andrews, who I just found out today, I didn't know this, he's been living in the United States for 10 years, but he is from the UK. He's one of the top crop circle researchers out there, and he wrote a story about a police officer this summer who is now saying that he was driving by a crop circle he saw these three tall guys, 6 foot tall blonde guys. He walked out there and said, hey, he heard this really weird noise, and then these guys took off at an amazing speed, much faster than humans could run. So he believes here that he saw some extraterrestrials running around a crop circle. I find that terribly interesting. Finally, in UFOs in Russia and the Niagara Falls. But yeah, there's Russia get some pictures every once in a while, but they felt that there was a UFO crash. Some people saw something streaking through the sky and a bright flash of light. And so they were investigating, and they don't feel it was a meteor. They didn't find any crash site with anything that had crashed. So very mysterious. Of course, a lot of astronomers are saying it was probably a meteor, but the witnesses are adamant that it was something strange. And in this picture, this is something, you know, we learn new things all the time. I don't know if you guys knew, but out there in Russia, they have their own kind of Stonehenge-type formation. So these very weird, tall stacks of rocks that are out there in this configuration in the middle of this gigantic field, kind of cool. That was the area where this sighting took place. And in the news story, you can see this Russian Stonehenge-type thing. Pretty cool. And then some star-crossed lovers out there in Niagara Falls enjoying their honeymoon also had a sighting that was reported to MUFON as well this week. So there's some of the UFOs in the news for the week. As usual, lots of UFO happenings out there. But now, my friends, let's go ahead and give our guest a call. My calling music, do-do-do-do-do-do. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba-da, do-do-do-do. There we go. We got a ring, people. We've got a ring. This is exciting.
Hello.
Hello, man. Please speak to Bryce.
Hello.
Hello, Bryce. Can you hear me? Hello. I guess our guest cannot hear. What's going on here? Can you hear me? I guess he cannot. I was just talking to him. All right. Get our tech in here. See what's going on. Hello, hello. Let me try this. Hello? He just cannot hear us. All right. Well, we're going to look at what's going on here. Bryce, can you hear me? Everything seems to be hooked up. Maybe he's in our chat.
How do I turn off call waiting? Can you close the door, please?
All right, bear with for a sec. Hello, hello? Huh. All right, well, let's see what's going on. We have... All right, we're checking in, but hopefully we can get this fixed in just 1 second. Let me see. right. Well, what do I have to talk about while we look at this stuff? Let's talk some more about Bryce. So, Official Denial, I think, talked about. He worked with Taken. I think I covered everything, but I think it's one of the things that I think is always interesting is this whole concept of, you know, people, the government actually using people like Steven Spielberg to release UFO info. Should we try again? All right, let's try this again.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hey.
Can you hear me this time?
I can indeed.
Okay, great. I don't know what happened there, but it looks like everything's working now.
Well, we're both deeply skeptical conspiracy theorists, so we can each probably come up with a couple of ideas.
They got to us.
They don't want us to talk.
Yeah.
But we'll do it anyway.
Wow. Then we must, we're going to come up with good stuff here then, if they're trying to keep us down.
So are we on the air right now?
Yeah. So we are on
Fantastic.
The air. And let's start out with, you know, you were a CNN correspondent quite some time back.
Yes, it was.
Were you into UFOs back then?
Not really. Was I aware of them? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was trying to remember the other day, you know, what my first time when I really started to, you know, to pay attention to them. And I guess I remember the first memory I have is my parents belonging to a book club of some kind. And one day The Interrupted Journey came. And I'm not even sure if my parents read it, but I did. And I thought it was a kind of a mind-blowing book to be, you know, coming to our house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think I started paying attention from that point on. Now, when I was at CNN, I was busy doing enough other things that there wasn't a lot of time to think about UFOs. And this is before the dawn of Larry King, so there wasn't even a place to talk about them, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really recall having too many thoughts about UFOs while actually doing TV news. I don't think that was a big deal for me. I certainly was not allowed to cover them.
Not allowed to?
Well, I think if we got our assignments. I was working in the L.A. Bureau, and we got our assignments out of Atlanta. So had Atlanta said, go check out something, we would have done it. I may even have done a UFO report or two. I just don't even recall. But had I suggested a UFO story to Atlanta, I'm pretty sure back then they would have said, we're trying to be taken seriously as a news
mm-hmm.
organization. What are you talking about?
Yeah, so not really a situation where it was something they wanted you to stick away from, but more of a situation, a credibility situation instead of a conspiracy situation.
I think in the same way that in many respects that's the case today where reporters that are in a hurry to make their, you know, on the way up are not eager to stake their climb or their reputation on covering UFOs
mm-hmm.
For fear that they will be portrayed by their superiors or their competitors as being not serious journalists. So, you know, in reality, the cover-up has worked very effective. If the idea of denial and ridicule, which was put into place so many years ago, had any effect, it seems to have made working journalists fearful of the topic.
Hmm. Now, at what point did you get involved?
I remember as kind of a radicalizing other book event, reading Missing Time when it came out, and saying that was an incredible book, and I also remember Communion. And at that point, I began to backfill my knowledge in a lot of other ways. So in other words, I sort of had my imagination captured and then begin to fill in the blanks. And all of the books that I've just mentioned have something to do with abductions. So I thought they all had the sound and feel of authenticity,
mm-hmm.
but I was a little afraid to go there first. So
right.
I started to look back into the cases that I might have missed growing up and or that were long ago buried. And some of those cases that you'll find from the military files that came out through Freedom of Information Act requests, etc., are the ones where I would gladly use those to convince a skeptical friend that they should take the whole phenomenon seriously.
Mm-hmm. So, and then did you begin doing that, like, you know, talking to your friends and showing them information?
I did, although by the time I did, as all of us do, although it's something that we may want to get into later. I do think for those people who are advocating for disclosure, one of the problems that the whole UFO community has is we advocate it to ourselves. And so we always are in agreement, yes, disclosure should come, yes, it's coming fast, or whatever we think about it. What we really should be doing is talking to other people who are less devoted and trying to raise their awareness. So I'll throw a new idea out on your program right now. We should have a National Disclosure Day, maybe one of the dates from the Roswell event, probably July 8th, the day that Walter Hout put out the only authentic press release in the UFO history. And maybe on that day we should all contact a friend who doesn't believe and tell them why we do.
That's not a bad idea. UFO outing weekend.
Well, we have to start somewhere, and
mm-hmm.
you have to start. Your program is Open Minds, and we have to open a few more minds as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, was that part of your intent when you began to the first project I know of that you worked on delving into this stuff was Dark Skies?
Well, actually, I've got two that predate that.
Okay.
Three things that predate. Dark Skies was something I came to much later in the game. Can I just give you a quick thumbnail of what those projects were?
Oh, yes, please do.
Well, the first thing that I ever did was write a film script, a spec feature film script called Progenitor, which later became Official Denial. And Official Denial became the first Sci-Fi Channel original movie. It aired in 1993. And Official Denial obviously goes back to that phrase and how it's been used in the UFO cover-up. But in the movie, I postulated that there was a Majestic 12. They were watching the abduction phenomenon quite seriously. And in the film, they basically rig up the house of someone who's been repeatedly abducted as a tripwire for what is called Operation Forced Encounter. So the main character, played by Parker Stevenson in this film, ends up being abducted, which causes Operation Forced Encounter to go into effect and they shoot down a UFO. And that was the first thing I ever did. At the same moment that Official Denial was coming out, I was a supervising producer on the first season of Lois and Clark. And I had the luck to write the first full episode. Someone had written a two-hour pilot, but the first episode was something I called Strange Visitor from Another Planet, going back to the Superman series of the 50s or 60s. And tried to tie the whole Superman mythos and mythology in with the UFO cover-up. And our main bad guy in that opening episode was Jason Trask, who worked for Bureau 39. Bureau 39 standing in for Majestic 12. And they had apparently decided that they thought Superman was an alien, which not everyone, even though now in our mythology of Superman, we all know that Superman is an alien from Krypton, but in the first episodes of Lois and Clark, when Superman first came on the scene, no one knew who he was or what he was. So I tied that in. That happened in 93. In between those two events, I was developing TV series I've managed to, I've been lucky enough to have five TV series I've developed as hour dramas get on the air and get the creative by credit for them. One of them I developed, which did not get on the air, was over at Amblin Entertainment with Steven Spielberg. And it was called Sightings before the TV series that you're familiar with,
wow,
which is a nonfiction show called Sightings. But Spielberg wanted to call this TV series in 91 Sightings. And so we developed a one-hour television series. And honest to God, I thought I'd won the lottery. I came home when I realized that I had been selected to develop this and told my wife, it's a slam dunk. Mr. Close Encounters wants to do a TV series about aliens.
Awesome.
And we pitched that to all the networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox, and they all passed.
Oh, no.
So I was disabused of the idea that it was something that would just plain happen just by walking into the building.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that sort of predated Dark Skies.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Dark
so
Skies
a lot.
Came after.
Mm-hmm. So a lot going on there. But then you finally got, then Dark Skies happened, and you were able to sell that.
Yes. But again, you know, the only one that didn't go on the air was the Spielberg one, Official Denial, Sci-Fi Channel, Lois and Clark was on ABC. Dark Skies was something that I was the executive producer of a Fox series called Mantis. It was about the first African-American superhero. And as the show got canceled, and we were sort of winding down our stay there, I met my partner, my future partner at the time. His wife was my assistant, Patricia Friedman, and Brent Friedman was her husband. And Brent and I kind of hit it off, and we realized that this passion we both had for the truth about UFOs was pretty deep in both of us, and we both had a lot of good stories. So we kind of fell into the rabbit hole and developed Dark Skies and created this monumental briefing book for it that ended up helping us sell the series in 1995, and then it went on the air in 96 and off the air in 97.
Now, when you started up with Dark Skies, I mean, it's pretty thoroughly based in research into the subject, correct?
It is, although I noticed in there's a book by an author named Bruce Rucks, Hollywood versus the Aliens. I was looking
mm-hmm.
over it last
yeah,
night.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And he just pretty much skewered us for Dark Skies.
Really?
But I think he missed the point. I think he thought that we were putting on the series saying this is the truth, but what we were doing was putting on a series that was a dramatic series that used inspiration from a lot of things that we knew to be true. But for example, our way of someone being, you know, after when they were abducted, they were a living biological organism of a ganglion was inserted in their, you know, into their brain. Well, the ganglion was a metaphor. You know, it was a metaphor for abduction. It was a metaphor for an implant.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things like that were just based on the idea that we were trying to blend the history of the 1960s with the sort of the secret history that would have had to happen if in fact Roswell had happened. I mean, we took it from the point of view that if Roswell was a true event, then when John Kennedy is getting inaugurated in 1961, it's a very different Washington than what we think of when we think of the New Frontier and Camelot.
Mm-hmm.
So we sort of ran with that, and each episode moved you through the 60s and allowed you to see lots of famous people blended into UFO history. But back to your question, which was it based on facts? Yes and no. We accepted that we were doing a dramatic series that we hoped would cause people to see it, be intrigued by it, and do more reading into the real facts of the matter. And, you know, I think that was our hope. We tried very much, though, to wrap ourselves in the sense that we were doing something very new. And remember also at the time that The X-Files was on, so we knew we had to be very different from them. We couldn't do a present-day case of the week kind of thing. So for example, while X-Files was being very coy with the viewers and sort of letting them know a little bit at a time, we decided to go in 100% the opposite direction. The opening scene in Dark Skies literally is Francis Gary Powers, who was shot down flying the U-2 plane over Russia. It's Francis Gary Powers chasing a UFO and seeing it up close and personal. And the reason he ended up getting shot down over Russia is he followed that UFO into Russian airspace. So we basically hung ourselves out there from the very beginning and said, we're not going to be coy. We're going to let you look at the aliens. We're going to let you look at their spaceships. And we're not going to do a V or a Independence Day where, you know, hundreds of giant spaceships hang over American cities. We're going to do more of a silent invasion, if you will, and use that to tell our story.
Right, which I think a lot of people appreciated, because you had to wait until, for weeks and get a little bit of what was really going on. And people love just diving into some of this stuff. And I know, even using some of the terminology like MJ-12, where X-Files didn't do that, a lot of people appreciated with Dark Skies. And a lot of UFO people really like Dark Skies and talk about it a lot.
Well, I appreciate that. We certainly worked very, very hard to incorporate not just official news figures in, but ufology into it. One of the things that Brent and I did in preparing this briefing book, which, by the way, we should come back to, it's a story in itself.
Okay.
But one of the things that we did is I collect Time and Newsweek. So I have a pretty much comprehensive collection of 60s Time and Newsweek. So we went through and pulled out all the lead events of the day and put them into a chart. Then we pulled all the UFO events of the day and put them into the same chart in another column. And whenever things would match up, we would find a story. So, for example, the New York power blackout of 1965 matches up with Dorothy Kilgallen's death, which matches up with UFO sightings in New Hampshire, which and Dorothy Kilgallen matches up with the fact that she was trying to break the story about UFOs, she said, shortly before her death. So that became a story for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we like to think that we found some patterns that wouldn't necessarily exist everybody.
Yeah. Well, definitely get back to Bruce Rux, too, because he's a perfect example of what I want to get into later.
Okay.
Because his book was all about the media and these spies and everything, creating this UFO kind of disclosure thing. But first, let's talk about that briefing book, because it seems like it had a lot to do with Dark Skies. And what exactly did that all entail?
Well, when I said that Brent and I sort of fell in the rabbit hole while we were developing
mm-hmm.
this thing, we just got so deeply into it that we couldn't stop ourselves. In other words, we probably could have pitched the thing with a single 10-page treatment. But instead, we created an ultra-classified briefing book that basically was basically what a black ops briefing book would have been, and that told the essence of the series. This briefing book that we prepared came with a gold foil seal that sealed the book, and with a note on the outside that said, by breaking the seal and opening up this book, you accept the penalties of treason. And we took that briefing book that was gold foil sealed and wrapped it in brown wrapping paper, tied it up with twine, and stamped top secret all over it. And when we pitched the show, we pitched it in one day to three different networks, as I recall, and we left the briefing book behind at each place. And by the end of the day, we had an offer on Dark Skies from both NBC and CBS.
Wow, so your plan worked.
Well, we thought it was interactive. We thought, how weird will it be that we're going to leave, and these people, these executives, are going to be looking at this brown paper, twine-wrapped document, and they open it up, and now there's a gold foil seal that says if they open it up, they're accepting the treason if they
mm-hmm.
breathe a word about it. And then they open it up and they start reading this thing. And the one thing you have to understand is that our concept that we sold to them was that we had been asked to tell the truth about UFOs as a television series to help prepare the public for disclosure, and that in order to do that, that we couldn't just plain tell the truth. We had to present the truth as fiction, and that the plan for disclosure was this television series.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is a pretty radical concept. We thought pretty clever, and it kind of worked. It made people feel like they were part of the disclosure movement by putting the show on. Now, granted, everything we said in Dark Skies was hardly true. We made up a lot of it. But
mm-hmm.
I go back to the central point of the series. We were only trying to tell one large truth, and the large truth was simply this. If UFOs are real, if Roswell was a true event, then the time period that we were talking about, the 1960s, there were a few pages missing from the history books. And to that extent, I think the Dark Skies stands up perfectly, because that's exactly what it said. And, you know, one of the things that we did that I thought was so good in the pilot is the young man who finds himself visiting Betty and Barney Hill in our pilot, which was one of my favorite scenes, decides that he's onto something, and he begins to investigate so much that he actually finds the bot character who is the leader of Majestic 12 and sort of forces his way into Majestic 12. And Bot basically brings him in and says, you've recruited yourself. And the Lone Guard character says, what do you think is behind all these UFOs? Do you think they're Russian? And Bot takes him down to the third door on the right, opens it up, and pulls something out of the freezer, throws the plastic aside, and shows the guy a frozen alien and says, you tell me, Mr. Lone Guard, does he look Russian to you?
Yeah, I love, you know, the dialogue, too. Like
so
that part.
We had a great time with that. But what I was going to say, the thing that kind of unlocks the series for me, what makes it true, is that on the night of the Cuban Missile Crisis threatening to go into a global holocaust, Lowengard goes to Bach's house and is having an argument with him about disclosure. And Lowengard says, I can't believe, given that these aliens are out here, I can't believe that Khrushchev and Kennedy would allow this to happen. And Bach just gives him kind of a funny look, and Lowengard says, wait a minute, President Kennedy doesn't know, does he? And Bach says, he knows what he needs to know.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to me, is true.
Yeah,
I think that's true.
And that's what's exciting, I think, for people in this field, that dialogue is kind of the dialogue we imagine, you know, in what's going on behind the scenes.
I think that a lot of it has been. If not the specific dialogue, the emotional truth of that scene is pretty striking. Because
mm-hmm.
the truth is, and by the way, it leads up to Reagan's comments that if there was an invasion going on, he thought he and Gorbachev would pull back from the brink because they would find more commonality. Well, that's basically what we said from the flip side in Dark Skies. We said that Kennedy probably didn't know about everything that was going on, and that's why in our pilot, Lowengard gives Bobby Kennedy a piece of the Roswell crash to show to his brother, and that is what in our pilot leads to the death of President Kennedy. Now, I'm not personally alleging the president.
Right.
There were so many people that wanted to kill President Kennedy at that time,
mm-hmm.
from the Cubans to the Mafia to the CIA to you name it. There are probably more possible culprits in that than you can imagine. So I'm not
right.
actually saying President Kennedy was killed over UFO disclosure.
I know the
but
Mafia.
For our series, yeah, for our series, it worked pretty well.
Yeah, the Mafia out of Pueblo, Colorado had threatened his life once.
I think the Onion did a really funny headline once where they had, you know, 357 different organizations that are suspected of Kennedy's death after he was shot.
Well, the premise that you started with, and even some of the storyline, like you've talked about with brothers being involved and showing each other pieces, is very similar to what Spielberg took with Taken and his series.
Right. Right. Well, I worked on Taken as
mm-hmm.
well.
And were you a writer?
I was. I need to put an asterisk on the play.
Mm-hmm.
I was hired as the co-executive producer on Taken in 1999, and we had multiple development meetings with Spielberg, some of them most often video conferencing. And there were a couple of other writers involved, writer-producers, Les Boheme, who ended up doing all of the series, and Manny Coto and myself. And in 1999, late in 99, I believe, I wrote one of the episodes. And then in late 99, I think Spielberg pulled the plug because he just wasn't satisfied that it was the series he wanted it to be. I never quite got the clear message on how that all shook down, but I know that 2 years later, when it resurfaced, they wanted to, it was going to be something that was done only by Les Boheme. So Les did that, and I made a deal to go write a pilot instead for DreamWorks, which was producing it. So it all worked out, but I was there for about 9 months, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was another great series. And, yeah, a lot of similarities, you know. And
well,
even the beginning premise about if Roswell happened, this is kind of what
history. Well, I'll tell you one better, Alejandro. The first episode of Taken, remember, I worked on it. I was the creator of Dark Skies, the co-creator with Brent Friedman. That first episode of Taken was directed by Toby Hooper, who directed the Dark Skies pilot.
Oh, wow.
It was produced by Steve Beers, who produced the Dark Skies series. And it starred Eric Close, who starred in the Dark Skies series.
Oh, right.
So that first episode of Taken is an homage to Dark Skies.
Wow, that's great.
Well, it's great for, I mean, it's great in retrospect. It's a little odd. I remember I had a hard time watching it because I felt, I just felt sad.
Hmm.
But it's a fine series. Don't get me wrong, and Les did a fine job with it. But you'd have to be crazy not to be a little conflicted given what I just said about all the Dark Skies connections.
Right, right. It's kind of like, you know, I did.
They liked it a little bit too much.
Yeah, gotcha. So with Taken, you know, and if people haven't seen that, that's another one you got to go see. Which reminds me, you know, Taken is something that they can buy. They should go buy the DVD set.
Right.
Really good. However, Dark Skies is not available. I had to go through the dark channels of internet piracy to be able to get some videos to watch it over again.
I feel very badly about that, and I would like to say to anyone who's a fan of the show, there are people on the internet who are currently offering the DVD series for sale who do not have it and keep your money, which I find to be tragic. I've tried for years now to get the Dark Skies series released on DVD. One of my neighbors is even the CFO of Sony, who has given me permission to set it up independently. It was scheduled for release by Sony 2 years ago. And when it wasn't being released, I called them and I said, "What happened?" And they said, we've killed it for now because the music's too expensive. And apparently, it turns out that because one of the great things about Dark Skies is that we incorporated the period music from the original artists all through it, and it gave it a really vibrant, great feeling to it. Well, each of those songs now has to be licensed. And when the number crunchers look at the amount of units they think they're going to sell versus, or not that they think they're going to sell, but the minimum number of units they might sell versus the amount of money it would cost to license the music, they get cold feet and decide not to release it. I have found three different DVD companies who all, when I told them, "Hey, Dark Skies is available for DVD," all said, "Fantastic, love that series, what a great product, let me get into it." And they get into it, and they crunch the numbers, and they all say, you know, in this environment where DVDs are softening as a market, we just don't feel comfortable about releasing it.
Wow, and you know, it feeds to the conspiracy buffs, you know, out there.
It does.
Hey, they're not releasing it. What's going on? I even read that online when I was looking for it. I searched and searched and searched, and people were saying, the government's not letting them release it, you know.
I can't tell you they're wrong. I mean, when you think about when you think about some of the things that people have really lied about and really done, crushing a DVD release seems pretty small potatoes.
Yeah, I don't think
actually anybody did that, but I certainly wouldn't think that it's outrageous given all the other crazy stuff that has happened in terms of trying to protect this incredible secret.
You know, and getting into conspiracies, that gets us back to your briefing book and kind of the premise, which was, you know, you were releasing, disclosing what's going on through the television show. People believe that. People believe that about your show and about all of Steven Spielberg's work in UFOs and ETs. Do you believe that?
I have a lot of different thoughts about that. Let's try to break that down into pieces, because there's a couple of pieces in that. The Spielberg piece is kind of the biggest one. Let's put that to the side for a second. I believe it is possible, as Bruce Rux tends to want to argue in his book, Hollywood versus the Aliens, that at the beginning, maybe in the 50s, there were some ideas being floated through the film business that possibly were given them through the intelligence community. That's possible. But in my belief about the way things get done in Hollywood today, there is so much information on the internet about UFOs, et cetera, et cetera. You don't need to have a shadowy intelligence agent give you an idea for a TV series. We've got plenty of them. I'm working on some myself right now. You don't need Majestic 12 or whatever has replaced it to feed you information. So, no, I don't believe it is currently an issue. As for the Spielberg thing, I think we're all giving Spielberg too much power in that regard, because think about the UFO or alien-related projects he's done. He's done Close Encounters of the Third Kind. He's done E.T., and he's done War of the Worlds, and he's done Taken. Well, those are four pretty radically different takes.
Right.
So if he's supposed to be conditioning us or something for a disclosure, then he should pick. And I have to say, in my conversations with Spielberg, and I was able to speak to him during the development of the Sightings Project in 91 and also during the development of Taken in 99, while he seems as well-versed on the topic as any one of us or any guest you'll have, he didn't seem like a guy with insider knowledge either. He seemed like he was developing a project where our conversations with him were like, well, what if we did this? Well, that'd be cool. What about that? You know, a lot of give and take, but hardly a guy pushing a hard agenda about anything. So I don't know about that. I think my opinion about the Secret Keepers is that the deny and ridicule method of sort of disinformation, et cetera, has done a pretty good job. We all love a good alien invasion piece. V is coming out, for example. Do you think the creators of V needed somebody pushing them from the intelligence community to try to do that retread? I don't think so. Do you think that the guys that are behind the movie The Fourth Kind, which will be coming out, had to have that fed to them by the intelligence committee? Quite the opposite. All they have to do is load up the internet or whatever. So I don't think that. I also think it's a bridge too far to think that somehow the people who have kept the secret for 62 years now, and maybe longer, but for certainly since Roswell, to think that somehow they think disclosure needs to happen now and they're preparing us for it? I don't think so. If they were going to disclose, they'd have voluntarily, they'd have done it a long time ago. They obviously don't intend to do it. They're obviously not preparing anybody for it, because disclosure, when and if it happens, it's going to raise so many ugly questions about the whole structure of secrecy that has existed around this situation, and where power really originates and is used in this country and globally, in fact, that I don't think any of the people who actually have that secret think it's a very good idea to disclose.
Well, and if you look into Donald Kehoe, you know, like you're talking about, maybe back in the time, and when you go into the research back into the 50s, late 40s, when all of this was really getting into the press, you see how there was a struggle as to what to do about this subject. And if you read Donald Kehoe's book,
right,
or you follow, you know, Hillenkoetter, the first CIA
right.
director, you'll see there were fighting about what to do and releasing to this to the public. Some people thought they should, some people thought they shouldn't. And Donald Kehoe writes about how the CIA kind of came in, said, look, the armed forces are all arguing, they're a mess. You need one person to take, one place to take this subject over. And that their view was, we'd never tell the public about this. And that seems to be the case up until today.
Well, I think, by the way, this does kind of cycle back to Dark Skies slightly, because my personal belief, and certainly what Brent and I based the series on, was that at the very beginning, we would probably have kept the secret ourselves. If you think about it, you're running a nuclear base, the only kind in the world, and a UFO crashes outside of it, and you tell the president, and you're the president, the last thing you're going to do is say, let's tell the Russians so they can demand to have the same access to it that we have.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to want to study it. So at the very beginning, you have to have secrecy, and it is simply military secrecy. But with each passing year, the secrecy tightens up a little bit and becomes more institutional and more formalized. We picked the 60s and the beginning of the new frontier with Kennedy as the sweet spot to tell our series story, or at least to begin it, because it was our feeling that after the 60s, as we get into the 70s and 80s, the whole concept of secrecy has become very tightened, and it's really not a big plan to disclose. In the 50s, it was our feeling that people were trying to get a handle on it, so secrecy was acceptable while they were trying to get a handle on it. But at a certain point, when you passed over from Eisenhower, the most important general of our time, and a popular president and a military leader, and handed off to John Kennedy, a new guy, we felt that was the sweet spot where secrecy trumped presidential authority.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we set Dark Skies there. That was just our belief. And as I read more and more and have heard more and more people discuss it, I think we were pretty close. I've heard Richard Dolan, who's written two phenomenally good books, and I'm sure you're well aware of both of them. I've heard him talk about it, and I think that he would tend to agree with that statement, that somewhere along there, it became more and more difficult to let the top guys know what was going on, because it was like a puzzle. There were pieces hidden within pieces within pieces. And then again, I think Dolan is out front talking about what's happened to the secret over the years, and I agree with him. I've been thinking about this for years myself, that in order to reverse engineer it, you had to outsource a lot of it. And we all know about the outsourcing in Iraq, that there were almost as many Blackwater contractors out there as soldiers at some times. And I would tend to agree right now that what may have happened to this secret is that it started as a military secret and has become a military industrial secret.
Mm-hmm.
Documents that belong to a government are subject to Freedom of Information Act access and various other whistleblower leakings and so forth. But when you send the information off into the private sector, you can deal with it as proprietary information, and you can probably cover it up even better.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, to support that, and I think you're right, you know, that's where there's gaps continue to get bigger and bigger about what the president knew, and over time presidents know less and less. And you can see a lot of records, of course, of Clinton and his staff and his wife all being involved with looking into the subject, or at least being involved with Rockefeller as well, who was looking into the subject and just not getting anywhere.
I want to read you something that a friend of mine just sent me. He's a person I worked with on Dark Skies, and he sent me a Facebook email the other day because he'd seen something I'd written about UFOs on my Facebook profile. And let me just pull it up here. Here it is. I'm not going to tell you who this is because I don't want to, he hasn't given me permission, but here's what he writes. It's very short. He says, a friend of mine who has the money to fly NetJets was talking to a steward the other day, and he routinely asked these men and women if they've had any interesting flights with interesting people lately, and the guy said, yeah, Bill Clinton. Apparently they were flying to Asia, and everybody on the large plane was asleep except Clinton. The restless ex-president, unable to sleep, came forward, sat in a chair next to this guy, holding a glass of scotch, and said, ask me anything. The steward asked him a few things, which he answered without any hesitation, personal things as well. But when the subject came to Area 51, not a peep. He said there was stuff there, but he could never talk about it. Go figure. But that was interesting.
Well, and he had a lot of struggle with Area 51 because of... which is another great aspect to demonstrate, I mean, the lack of scruples or even any thought towards law, which was an example of the Area 51, the trouble he had with the contractors out there, defense contractors, were illegally having people throw, like, nuclear waste into holes they dug in the ground and throw gas on them and burn them. And these people were literally, they were dying. Their skin was falling off of their body. And these employees were trying to sue the defense contractors, and they couldn't because Area 51 didn't exist.
That's just awful.
And so Clinton struggled with that because it was during his term, and eventually he was the first president who had to say, okay, we're going to allow these guys to sue, but Area 51 still doesn't exist, and you know they have to do this whole crazy law thing around that.
Listen, if there were not these hundreds of great military sightings and these thousands of great witness sightings and radar visual returns and that kind of thing, if there weren't all those things, and Area 51 was just alleged to be this super secret place, then I think there are probably many, many reasons you could say Area 51 could exist that have nothing to do with aliens or UFOs.
Right.
It's the context. I think context is key in all these issues. And the context is, well, the truth behind Roswell is pretty well accepted. These sightings cannot be explained, and they're a physical structured craft from somewhere that's not here.
Right.
So in that context, is it reasonable to assume that we have some places in this country where we try to privately look into these things? Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. And you know, I have a brother who works in the aerospace industry, and during Dark Skies I used to kid him and go, hey, so what are you working on? You're working on reverse engineering some of those UFOs? And he never thought it was funny. He said, could you stop talking to me like that?
Yeah.
Don't say those things to me.
Yeah. Yeah, you hear these stories over and over again. And, you know, a lot of the people who, when I joined MUFON at first, I was surprised that it was older people, mostly retirees, and that there were a lot of retired defense contractors. And
right.
Some who would not talk about what they had worked on, or they couldn't talk about certain things, and were very frustrated about it and didn't have a sense of humor about it.
No. Well, why would they? If you talk, we may, though, be coming up now on a period in the same way that the Roswell survivors, they're racing the Undertaker to take the last testaments, and there's been a lot of deathbed confessions. My personal feeling is the next wave of revelation is going to start coming from people who have worked on engineering from alien technology, or who have seen bodies or various things, who on their deathbed say, screw it, it's time for this to get out and start talking more openly about it.
There's a gentleman like that right now. Interesting you bring it up. You know, David Sirita has done a documentary with him in it, Bill Bushman. And this guy it's been interesting because he's really skirting on the edge of saying something and not saying something. And you can see this in Sarita's interviews with him, but he was an engineer, one of the a well-respected engineer working for Lockheed Martin on Skunk Works. But I have seen interviews that he will not allow to be released yet. That he states that I know for a fact we were back engineering.
One of the great stories, I tend to think deathbed confessions are a powerful tool.
Mm-hmm.
The deathbed confession of Walter Hout, if you will,
right.
That the affidavit exists and Don Schmidt got is powerful. There are some big ones that could happen that would change, that would be game changers. You probably read in Dolan's book about Jimmy Carter, who was seen after a UFO briefing by a lower-level staffer with his head in his hands and just incredibly distraught. And then he backed away from his plans for making public various UFO issues and files. Carter's an old man.
Mm-hmm.
If he knows something or was told something, he's a patriot. Maybe, one thing he could do as a patriot is say, I have to keep the secret. But another thing a patriot could do on the way out would be to get rid of the secret. Same could happen with George Bush Sr.,
mm-hmm.
who probably does know literally where the bodies are buried, if you will. He could, on his deathbed, bring us around too. I have one story to add to this thing. Brent and I had several. Well, I'll only tell you one of the stories right now, but we were approached by various people before Dark Skies and during Dark Skies. But one of the stories Brent always told me that I thought was incredible is he grew up next to I believe he was the Undersecretary of the Navy, John Harrington, during the first, he's part of the Reagan kitchen cabinet, and then later went on to become Secretary of Energy. And Brent grew up next to him on the block. And Brent, getting out of college, was asked to drive a car across the country for Harrington to take possession of because he'd moved to Washington, D.C. And without boring you about all the details, Harrington was drinking the night that Brent showed up there, and they were out sitting on the back patio, and Brent had never seen the guy take a drink in his life, and he was hammering down the drinks, apparently. And he said to Brent, there is intelligent life in the universe besides us, and I've seen it.
Wow.
And he said to Brent, I've got three daughters. I cry myself to sleep every night thinking this is the world they're going to grow up in.
Mm.
So I don't know what that's, secondhand and
mm-hmm.
so forth. And please don't sue me, John Harrington. I'm just passing this on. Those are the kind of stories that you hear all over the place. So all I'm saying is eventually somebody who means something to everybody is going to tell a story like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will have a fully different conversation happen in this country and around the world.
Yeah. Now, getting back real quick, because I just wanted to share, when I got involved with MUFON as a PR person in the last 3 years, I've worked with a lot of different media, all the major cable networks, a ton of different documentary makers, and I came to the understanding to see some more insight into what's going on, and I came to what you had mentioned earlier. I don't see that there is a government disclosure campaign going on through the media, because all of these people I worked with, they came up with the idea themselves for whatever reason, typically just to kind of jump on the bandwagon. They decided themselves they wanted to do something on UFOs, and it was totally something of their own making, not something they were told to do, and they certainly didn't have any insight because they were coming to us to give them the scoop on who to talk to and what's going on.
That's true, but I do think in a post-disclosure world, there will be a special place in hell for the media because this is the greatest story never told. And
I agree.
These people who should have been able to see this story and assign some resources to look into it were either co-opted or foolish and have let it go without covering it. And when they do cover it, they're either snickering or condescending, and it's the kind of journalism that I describe as some say yes, some say no, we say maybe journalism.
And that's
where they split it right down the middle.
It's a perfect description. That's a perfect description because maybe is safe, and even better, you reap the rewards. You reap the great ratings because you're covering UFOs, and you're staying safe by saying maybe.
And they don't try to prove anything.
Right.
You know,
or even research.
The resources have not been assigned. And the reason they do this goes back, again, I spent 8 years as a TV news reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you how that happens. Your assignment desk, first of all, the assignment desk rarely is going to cover a UFO thing unless they have to. But if they do, they're going to say, go get one of those UFO wackos, interview them. Then get a skeptic and interview them.
Mm-hmm.
Because then the story is, quote, unquote, balanced.
Right.
So somebody says, I saw something, or this is what happened, or whatever the story is, and then somebody else says, no, it couldn't possibly have happened. It was explained by this. And then the reporter says, with kind of a bemused smile on their face, I guess we'll just never know.
Right. And you know what's interesting to add to that? We had Dr. Roger Lear in here yesterday doing some stuff, and we're working. And he's the guy who's a surgeon who's pulled implants out of abductees. And
I believe he lives out near where I live. He's in Thousand Oaks.
Exactly. He's in Thousand
yeah.
Oaks. And he had a good point. Not only do they bring on the debunkers and they'll have their researcher, the UFO researchers don't get paid, but the debunkers do.
Absolutely.
And he's
Absolutely.
Right. I know from having insight into these documentaries and news programs that is the case. That seems to be pretty ironic as well.
It's very ironic. That's why I currently have a couple of books under option that I think are very important books for a feature film project. And my what I've said to both of the authors, who I think are phenomenal, is one way to help you carry on your research is to sell something, so at least you get paid for your work.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the problem is people that, not only are the debunkers paid, but the secret keepers are well paid. And the people who are paid to ferret out news at the major news organizations don't actually do it. So
right.
you end up, the Woodwards and Bernsteins, frankly, don't exist in
right.
the media on this issue.
Yeah.
And who have to exist instead are those common average guys like you and me and all the other people who are involved in this, who basically just don't like being lied to.
Yeah.
And it just pisses them off enough that they decide to devote their precious resource of time and energy and often funding things on their own or begging for
mm-hmm.
dollars from grants to try to get this truth out, a truth that some people know and have known for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a reason to keep this secret right now, and there may be, I suppose. I guess you could argue there may be. It would only be because the truth is really frightening.
Right.
And I hope it's not.
Yeah.
But I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you have a take on the underlying reality?
Well, in my investigation, one of my favorite quotes is from a documentary called Fast Walkers, and it's Jim Mars, and he says, you know, some people ask me, are they good, are they bad, are they multidimensional, are they from this planet, are they from inside the Earth, and he says, I like to think possibly all the above. I think there's a lot going on there, and certainly there's no doubt, even if there is a very malevolent type of force or group here, I think possibly it's just misunderstood, but there's no doubt there are also, in my mind, from my research, very positive forces at play as well. So I think I like the all the above.
I think
option.
It's a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the way I would put what we're into right now, we're six decades into a quiet revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And as we have passed the millennium mark, the outlines of the reality that we're living has been sneaking up on us a little bit at a time. And I think the way to think about this is the issue that got hushed up by one generation and then was turned into an object of derision by another generation mm-hmm. now deserves to, and demands to be heard straight up in our generation.
Yeah, and I think
we've had a three-generation yeah. handoff on this issue, from cover-up to derision yeah. to revelation.
Well, I kind of personally see that whole era you tackled in the 60s with Kennedy to be sort of a revolution where the empire struck back and the
yes.
empire's been in control. And hopefully things will turn around, because there's many subjects that seem to have been really hushed up and hidden, and all of these big money people taking control and manipulating things. And I think, George, you know, you've brought up Richard Dolan, and he puts it this way, and I like the way he puts it, that when you have a government, and he says historically this happens, when you have a government and controlling kind of elite, and then you have the truth, and though the gap between the two gets further and further, at some point there's a breaking point where there's a snap in like the rubber band holding them, and you have a lot of, it's difficult, you know, you have a difficult time while things kind of rebalance. But the further that gap gets, then the further back the, you know, the bigger the snap, and the harder the situation when things get straightened out. And that's what he says, you know, is a danger with all of this secrecy.
Well, I think that that's true, because especially Dolan is big on this, and I agree with him. We're talking about a national security state. We're talking about a structure of illegal secrecy. And there's going to be people who, when and if this truth is widely realized and investigated, not only will we have to sort out who's out there and what they want and what their agenda is, and the people who have kept the secret may or may not know what all the answers, but we're going to look at these people that did this, and there are going to be people that are going to be arrested.
Yeah.
And we may see a time where the President of the United States does what Gerald Ford did with Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get past Watergate, Ford pardoned Nixon. You may have a future president who, post-disclosure, pardons everybody.
Yeah,
so that we can deal with the future instead of with the past.
Obama will have to pardon George Sr.
He might. He might.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and you know there actually is. Interesting enough, this was first started by supposed abductee, who says he got this concept during an experience, which was there has to be an amnesty type of
right
component where we grant amnesty on the condition that the secrets are given. And I personally don't mind that. It's kind of like they did in South Africa, where in order for everything to kind of get balanced, and that could be why the secrets are continuing, because these people are afraid of...
Your South Africa analogy is very apt. We may end up having a truth commission.
Right, exactly.
In order to sort it all out. And probably, I can't predict how it will feel, because I don't know exactly what they'll tell us and whether they'll try to spin it or get out only part of it.
Right.
But depending on what the truth is ultimately revealed to be, it's possible I may feel like amnesty is a good idea too.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's a certain point. This is such an outrageous situation that even well-meaning people have probably disagreed over the years about what to do about it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean not everybody who kept that secret is probably an evildoer or a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them have been doing their jobs.
Exactly.
Some of them are members of our military who we trust to be able to keep a secret and act by following orders.
Right. We've had Jesse Marcel on, Jr., and I talk with him often. I do his website, and he talks about his father that – you know, when his father, who was the first intelligence agent officer to collect the Roswell material,
sure,
that when they told him this is a secret and you've got to keep it secret, he said, yes, sir. No questions asked. He kept the secret. And
that's right.
He didn't think twice about it. And same with his boss, Colonel Blanchard. And they went on to have good careers, because when they were told to put out a press release that this was a flying saucer, they put out a press release. When they were told to shut up about it, they shut up about it. and they're doing their job. He kept a secret, you know, from all of us for decades, but he was doing his job.
And yet, again, the thing that works toward, at the same time, a disclosure feels like an impossible thing. It also feels like an inevitable thing, because human nature being what it is, pieces of this truth are going to be revealed slowly but surely. And we all have our little stories. My father, for example, when I had Dark Skies on the air, he would go to his troop carrier reunion events, and he had one guy come up to him and say, so Harvey, you got the kid that's got the Dark Skies show on? And he said, yes. He said, yeah, I was at Roswell after, you know, the war. I went there, and he said, we had, you know, there was a place that was under heavy lock and key, and we were told not to look inside, and he said, it was clearly no weather balloon. He said, you tell your kid he's on the right path there. Yeah, so everybody's got these stories.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they, you know, that's not proof of anything, but
right.
But on the other hand, it's not something that a 75-year-old guy is going to make up either.
Yeah, someone in the chat said, I don't know how this ever can be disclosed. And I was chuckling because, here again, I think Dolman's one of the best thinkers in this field. But he was talking about, if disclosure was to happen, it's going to be awful. There's going to be turmoil. There's going to be people who will be freaking out. You know, there's going to be people questioning their religion. It's going to be very difficult. But it's inevitable, and it has to happen.
It does have to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean, by the way, that those of us, this may very well be a careful what you wish for situation.
Yeah.
Because those of us who demand it and insist on it and work for it have good reason to do so. We're not wrong. But because the secret keepers have kept us from some hardcore truth that they may know, we may be very surprised when we hear what they know.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I certainly, even though I feel, and I know from investigations, I know certain things, but Lord knows I don't know it all, and nobody does, and there's no doubt there will be some shocking revelations.
There is no doubt, and we will deal with it. We've dealt with things before. It's interesting. Do you remember after 9/11 we said everything changed? But then, of course, life kind of went on, and we went back to our old ways pretty much, and things didn't really all change. I happen to think disclosure is when everything really will change.
Yeah.
After that's such a big issue, and it's global, and it's not about not to take anything away from the terrorist act of 9/11, which was horrific, and actually has changed how I think about the world, et cetera. But I just think the revelation of whatever the truth of the UFO situation turns out ultimately to be has to change virtually every aspect of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what that is going to be, but I look for it to happen in my lifetime.
Yeah, I hope so. And what you said reminded me, too, of something Franklin Carter, this other researcher, talks about, because he talks about, you know, things will change, and we'll have a lot more answers. But still, remember, the ETs aren't going to pay your bills, that life's going to go on, and we're still going to need to do our job and pay our bills. And
we're still going to get up in the morning
and
have a job to go to and a mortgage to pay and stomachs to feed and kids to raise.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing will change about that. But I do think we'll get on our morning Starbucks, instead of talking about the Dodgers losing or something like that, we're going to be saying, I can't get enough. I'm watching the news 24/7, which, by the way, I find to be really ironic. The news media, which has so booted this entire problem, the second that the crack opens and disclosure, the light of disclosure begins to shine through it,
mm-hmm.
these guys are going to go 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be specials and you name it.
And they're going to have on the debunkers, they're going to have these SETI guys, they're going to have you know,
Well, I don't think they're going to have the debunkers on. When disclosure happens,
oh, no,
it's
but Michael
Shermer
is going to say, oh, we knew the whole time. We got a signal
well, they might
you know,
do that.
5 years ago, and we just couldn't tell you. But now we're the authorities on this.
Yeah, episode. I know. That's going to be crazy. It's going to make us all want to tear our fists out of the ceiling. By the way, I just wanted to say, you mentioned these debunkers and the SETI people. I actually, in another lifetime, when I was like still a TV reporter, did a half-hour interview during the Saturn encounter with Carl Sagan,
mm-hmm.
and ended up getting in, you know, talking to him in the parking lot afterwards. And I think Carl Sagan, really brilliant guy,
mm-hmm.
but demonstrates deeply how the scientific community will also get one of those special places in hell when this disclosure happens. Because here's a guy that argued to anyone that would listen, there were billions and billions of planets out there and galaxies, and that there had to be hundreds of thousands of intelligent civilizations out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But the only way we could talk to them is through a radio telescope. They couldn't possibly be here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's just not logical.
Yeah, we need to...
And that's why in Dark Skies, we made Carl Sagan the guy that replaced Donald Menzel on Majestic 12. Because in our opinion, that's the kind of thinking. In fact, the way we did
right.
it is we had a guy pick up Carl Sagan and say, listen, do you want to know the truth? If you want to know the truth, then you're in the system.
Well, and that's...
And you got to play it our way. If you don't want to know the yeah. truth, then get out of the car and keep walking.
Exactly. And that's, you know, what it seems if Menzel was really part of Majestic 12, and also known for being a major debunker, then this guy was, you know, playing a role in the public, but in the back, in on all the secrets.
I do think, while I'm less, as we discussed, less in agreement that there's any need to recruit Hollywood anymore to do anything to either prepare the way or to disinform, I do think that there are people who have been on the payroll as debunkers.
Mm-hmm.
I would certainly put Donald Menzel in that crowd. Philip Klass I would put in that crowd. And I'm just nominating Carl Sagan in that crowd myself.
Well, a lot of people put him there, and I do find it mysterious that he was so about searching for extraterrestrial life, and then it seems like there was this total turn where it almost seems as though he started to be a debunker, got on the payroll or something.
He did. Mm-hmm. I mean, his last book, I've got a copy of it here, Demon Haunted World. I read it and I say to myself, you of all people should have understood
right.
that the science that we have today will be nothing compared to the science of 500 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're telling me these people are a million years in advance of us, which you used to say, then if there are physical ways to get here, they'll probably have figured it out. And by the way, if any of these intelligences are artificial intelligences, then I would argue Sagan's saying that they couldn't be here because it would take too long probably is not a deal breaker to an artificial intelligence.
Right. Oh yeah, well, you know, we're out of time. This has been an awesome show. We could keep going on forever. I was really excited to have you on because I know on UFO Not Radio, you know, I could tell you had a lot to say, and I loved everything you talked about on there. So I've been real excited for that show and rightfully so because this has been great. So,
well, Alejandro, you are a great interviewer.
Thank you.
Your show rocks, and I think you're doing great work, and you should just keep it all up.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I'll definitely have you on again. Sometime in the future, in the next few months. And just for the listeners out there, we'll probably have someone in the studio, definitely. I haven't determined exactly who, so if you're watching live, you'll be able to see the guest here in the studio instead of this little doll that people in the chat have named Chico Spock. But Bryce, thank you very much for being on the show. Wish you the best of luck in your future projects.
Thank you, and watch the skies, everybody.
Yep.
Thanks a lot, and good night.
Good night. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining the show. Be sure to be back next week. Like I said, we'll have our guest in the studio. Everybody's real excited. Chico. But yeah, this was an awesome show. So thanks for Bryce for that. And keep your eye out. Hopefully he'll get his Dark Sky series in DVD soon. But you all have a lovely week, and we'll be seeing you.